You're listening to Aging Redefined with your host, Kendra Vallone. This show will give you the tools and information for better health as you age. Now, here's your host, Kendra Vallone.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Aging Redefined. I'm your host, Kendra Vallone, and I'm joined by my co-host, who is board certified in internal medicine and pulmonary medicine with advanced training in anti-aging, Dr. Larry Emder. Hi, Dr.
Hello.
Emder. Hi.
Great to be here with you.
always a pleasure to have you here.
Smiley face and all.
Yeah. You're looking sharp, though. I like the purple.
My wife dressed me today, so.
That's smart.
Everything's matching.
Yeah. Go.
Just joking.
Mrs. Emder. Yeah. I appreciate that. Yeah. So how you been? What's new?
I've been great. And even if I wasn't great, I'd say I was great.
But probably.
I had like my third weekend off in a row.
Bravo! Well done.
And ran my dogs in an agility trial. It's called a NADAC agility trial last weekend.
No, okay. So, but before you get into that, we need to tell the audience that you are like a massive dog lover, which they wouldn't know that. But you go over to your house and you have like ribbons and pictures of your dogs in frames. And not to make you sound strange, but like it's pretty. These animals.
We have these very unusual dogs. Mm-hmm. They look like they got stuck in an elevator, so they're like really narrow with a narrow face. Some people say they look like sheep.
They do look like sheep.
And they're called Bedlington Terriers. Mm-hmm. And these are British dogs, mm-hmm. Which they look like foo-foo dogs, but they're actually...
Muscle dogs.
Well, they're trained to hunt. They use them to go into the mines after rats. So
really,
no rats on our block.
Well, that's a good thing.
These dogs, and they're hunters. These dogs, for fun, we do something called agility.
Okay.
Where they have to run a course, run through tunnels, run over jumps, and everything is timed. They can't make any mistakes, and these dogs are great. There's one thing that holds them back. You know what that is?
You.
Me.
Exactly. Sorry, I didn't mean to ruin your joke.
Yeah, but. The agility is an army of two people. That's the dog mm-hmm. and the handler. And it's my job to give the commands of where to go, left, right. And a lot of times they know better than I where they go. So mm-hmm. they would be doing a lot better if it wasn't for me. But
how do you practice for something like that? Do you have an obstacle course in your backyard or what?
Yeah, so we have an obstacle course in the backyard.
Do you seriously?
Seriously. That we go down.
Some people have like little mini putt-putts. Some people have pools. Right, have a dog obstacle course.
We have a teeter-totter that they learn to go up.
No kidding.
Tunnels that they run through and jumps they have to go over and tires they have to jump through. In our day, I actually took lessons like once a week.
Oh my gosh.
Twice a week. We would go for either group lessons or private lessons to learn how to run these dogs.
No kidding. Why? Like what made you do that?
You end up with a better dog. Why is that? Number one, the dog, need exercise. We need exercise.
Okay.
So it keeps them in great shape. Number two, it keeps their mind in great shape because now they have a mission, which is to run the course, and they want you to be happy, and they want to be happy. It gets the dog outside. It's just a great hobby, and it's a great way to get more out of your dog.
So. At what point do you start this? Because let me tell you, I've got a dog. She's about one, and we're excited when she goes to the bathroom outside. So it's like little baby steps here. But
it's important to start young.
Okay,
and just kind of easy exercises. But you really don't want your dog jumping till he's at least over probably a year and 2 or 3 months. Give their joints a chance to develop. So usually we don't get dogs into jumping till they're over a year, year and a half. But there's little things you can do to improve, get them to follow commands.
Okay.
We teach them to turning left, turning right.
They respond. Is that like they respond to the word? Because like my dog knows like four words. If I tell her to go get her teddy. Like she can grab her teddy bear. So does a dog understand like right and left?
Right. I train them to turn left and right. I train them to stop and touch, because when they come off a contact, like a dog walk, they have to touch at the end, both for their safety and to show that you can control them. So what you end up with is with a smarter dog. And it's just a great hobby. And there's the San Diego Agility Club out in Dehesa, which is, a great way to learn the sport. And it's really just a lot of fun. Your dog is getting exercise, you're getting exercise, and you end up with a smarter, more obedient dog. theoretically. I say theoretically because I'm having problems with my dog.
Well, it sounds like they've accomplished what they can. I mean, you know, they've already gotten to first place and you've got all these medals and stuff. So if you'd like another one, like I've got one, I can just bring her over and you guys can hang out.
Well,
maybe
I could probably
start her
doing
a couple things.
I can give you something very easy to do. And that is get four pie plates. You put it on the ground.
Okay.
And then you go up to the pie plate and you tell them to sit and touch. And you just put a little piece of food on the pie plate and you get them to just stop and to listen to you, just the word touch. So, you know, just by doing simple exercises like that, they get to follow your command. And then, you know,
trying to get their nose to touch the pie plate.
Right. You want them to actually stop and put their nose down and get some food off the pie plate. Because once they start doing a contact, you'll have them, go on a dog walk. And at the end of the dog walk, you'll have that little pie plate there with a little piece of food on it. And when you tell them to touch, you give them the reward of the food. So you teach them, you condition them to stop at the end of a run, which is important for their safety so they don't, you know, jump off too early and hurt themselves.
I don't know why, but for some reason that little command stresses me out. Like just trying to think that I can get my dog to do something that's just so simple. I don't know. I really hope I'm a good mom because at this point I'm
frustrated
with my dog.
What kind of dog do you have?
She is a Maltipoo Yorkie. So she's a little mix thing. And she's a doll. She's a little lover. She's so cute. But she's
the one you can put in like your handbag?
Great. No. She's like 11 pounds.
Okay.
But she's frisky and feisty and all those wonderful things, jumping up on the couch and whatnot. And I know that she's smart. So she listens. It's the whole doing what we say kind of thing, you know.
Well, years ago, it used to be you had to have a purebred to do this sport. But they realized.
Who put the rules down? You mean like the Kennel Association
American,
or whatever?
Kennel Association.
Okay.
AKC. But they realized, you know, there's a lot. There's now a class called All American, which, you know, can be.
Which means mutts. Really?
Which means mutts.
Really? They call the All American class for the mutts.
Exactly.
Wow. It's a melting pot out there.
Yeah. So, when you run your dog, you're competing with other dogs in the same height. You know, it's by height, 12 inches, 14, 16, 20 inch.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, small dogs aren't, you know, running up against big dogs. But I definitely recommend if you want a fun thing to do with your dog, you'll end up with a better dog and you'll both be getting more exercise and a healthier dog doing agility. And you can, you know, go online.
Do you have video? Because I would have did Mrs. Emder take video? Because I just want to see you kind of jumping through hoops.
Go onto YouTube, put in Larry and Brownie Bedlington, our runs will come up. You'll see me doing runs.
I'm putting it on Facebook.
I think it's Larry and Brownie Agility or Larry and Brownie Bedlington. You'll see
okay.
It runs.
I'll put it on Facebook. I'll put it on our Facebook page. If you're just tuning in, our Facebook page is Aging Redefined Radio. You got to jump on and like it.
So let's talk about what's new in medicine.
Yeah, hey, go for it.
I got a bunch of...
You said you've had a lot for a while, so I'm going to let you just...
You keep putting me on hold.
...shovel it out.
this is actually from UT Health from last week, October 22nd. There's an article there, Keeping Tabs on Your Blood Pressure. I'm actually an expert on the blood pressure because I'm on like four medicines to control my blood pressure.
But you're supposed to be eating healthy. You're like a vegan, vegetarian, non-gluten, ice cube flavored water kind of person.
Well, did you ever hear of Sam Emder?
No.
Well, he's my father. So he gave me. Oh. And Regina Emder, they gave me these genes, which drive that pressure.
All right, good to know.
Dr. Ali Hazmi from Scripps Clinic was talking about hypertension as the silent killer. The why is because your pressures can be really high, and unless you go to the doctor and get it checked, you don't know it. And the consequences of a high blood pressure could be anything from a stroke to a heart attack to an intracerebral bleed to renal failure. So that's the bad news. The good news is the studies have shown that the lower you keep your blood pressure, the longer you're going to live. So if you want to be around for your great-grandchildren, you want to know what your blood pressure is. Mm. You want to get your pressure down.
Okay. My family naturally has low blood pressure, but at the same time, I'm like constantly stressed out. So at some point, is that going to just jump?
Well, we know that from
is it stress?
Previous radio shows, your family has other issues. So You definitely missed the hypertension issue. God bless you and your family. But all my family is hypertensive. And the key is there's things you can do to lower your blood pressure.
Okay.
So, like, what are they? And there's things we've talked about.
Eating? Does eating have a lot to do with it?
Eating right, which means eliminating a lot of salt from your diet. Means
I like salt.
I know. I'm going to get into that in a minute. It means being at your ideal body weight. It means also exercising. Are kind of low-hanging fruit things you can do to get your pressure down. So if you already have a perfect weight, and you're not stressed and you're eating right, you still need to go to your doctor on a yearly basis and have your blood pressure checked.
Mm-hmm.
And if it is elevated, there are a whole host of medications that can be used. The problem is that as we get older, and we all want to get older, but as we get older, our blood vessels become less compliant, which means they become stiffer. So really, as you approach your 60s, 70s, and 80s, a high percentage of Americans will have hypertension. So don't be surprised if you're 55, a little overweight, and you go to your doctor and your pressure is like mildly elevated. Let's say, well, what's a normal blood pressure? We want it to be about 120 over 80.
Mm-hmm.
So know what your blood pressure is, and if it's high, get it down, and you're going to live longer and do better.
Mm-hmm. And don't eat certain things?
Well, let's see. I got about 30 seconds.
What was the big one?
The big one was the foods we eat. You want to limit the salt in your
salt,
diet.
Salt, limit salt.
I'll give
salt.
You one
okay.
food.
Okay.
Bread.
What is up with this? We like bread now. Remember, we were not doing gluten, and now you're saying, and then we did do gluten, and now we're not doing
gluten,
it again.
But it turns out one piece of bread has about 230 milligrams of salt, and you only want about 1,000 milligrams of salt in your diet a day. And two pieces of pizza actually hits the 1,000 milligrams of salt.
Well, we all know pizza is very healthy for us, on many levels. So,
for a future show, I think we should have an expert come and talk to us about hypertension. There's a lot to go over.
You're the hey. You know everyone in San Diego. That's your job.
We'll
you can work on that.
You on this show, so I won't have to.
But this is the show that everybody needs to be paying attention to because we've got some great information.
About superbugs and how not to get them. And we'll be right back.
Yes. Stay with us.
When Joe was in his last days, I was frightened of not having the right help at the right moment. So I set out to find a hospice I could call at any time, day or night. Only VITAS provided telecare, the 24-hour access we needed.
Mom's illness was overwhelming toward the end, and I wanted a hospice that had everything and everyone we needed. We discovered only VITAS employs more physicians who specialize in hospice care than anyone nationally. That made Mom and us feel better.
When Carol was dying, I promised she could stay at home and had the very best care. I did my research. Only VITAS had the experience to take care of the love of my life.
Call VITAS Innovative Hospice Care toll-free at 877-647-1124 for a free hospice evaluation. That's 877-647-1124. Or visit VITAS.com for more information.
Transition is always difficult, especially after surgery. At Villa Las Palmas Healthcare Center, we make sure it's as efficient as possible. As one of the highest-rated Medicare facilities in San Diego, we offer a variety of services to meet your needs. From subacute care to general physical therapy, we'll help create a plan to get you back to where you want to be. If your doctor recommends skilled nursing as your next step, come visit us and see how our skilled care has what you need to get back on your feet. For more information, please visit our website, VillaLasPalmasCares.com.
No one wants to think about having a heart attack, but should you or a loved one need life-saving care, you want to go to a hospital that has a track record for saving lives. I'm Dr. Mike Mikowski, a cardiologist at Alvarado Hospital. As a designated San Diego Heart Attack Receiving Center, we recognize the importance of getting life-saving cardiac care. Our state-of-the-art cath labs offer life-saving treatment when you need it most. For information, visit alvaradohospital.com.
Alvarado Hospital is one of the top 15 health systems in the nation.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Aging Redefined. I'm your host, Kendra Vallone, joined by my co-host, Dr. Larry Emder. And Dr. Emder, we've got a special guest on today, so I'm going to turn it over to you so you can introduce him.
Very excited to introduce Dr. Fadi Haddad. who I work with in East County.
Mm-hmm.
He's board certified in internal medicine, practicing at Grossmont Alvarado and Privileges at Mercy Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
He's board certified in infectious diseases. And he's going to be talking to us today about us, about superbugs that are out there in the environment.
That sounds scary.
I'm not talking about super like mosquito bugs. I'm talking bacteria bugs.
Right, the kind that you can't see. That sounds scarier.
So he's from internal. He did his medicine at the University of Jordan. Then came to the United States and went to the Westchester Medical Center in Valhalla for his medicine residency, and then I think went to Inglewood Medical Center in New Jersey for training in infectious disease, where he did his fellowship in ID. He's written papers on Lyme disease and many articles on multi-drug-resistant organisms such as Acinetobacter. And I'm saying this because I want to make you say that word.
I'm already, it's all over my head. I'm like, wow.
So Dr. Haddad, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Larry. And thank you, Kendra, for inviting me.
Of course.
It's a pleasure to be on this show. And you guys are pros in this. And I'm really happy to be here. So first thing, I want to give one disclosure that I don't have any dogs at home. But my kids have been asking me for a while to get them a dog. So I think I'm going to listen to your recommendations about dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And I will probably ask you, in the future.
Well, do your kids have allergies?
They don't have allergies to dogs because they, that I know. So
the thing about Bedlington Terriers is they're hypoallergenic.
You sell your dog.
They come in beige and silver and tan.
Just to match your interior,
which
whatever works for
all,
you.
they go with all furniture. So.
Okay, thank you very much. So we'll have to ask you that in the future.
Main key point is when you do get a dog, you hand it over to Dr. Emder and he'll just put it through agility training for you.
I like that.
I am crazy about that. So we hear a lot in the press about superbugs. What are these superbugs, actually?
Thank you. This is a very important topic, and I actually, the CDC has issued a warning in the last month about the rise of superbugs in the United States. The incidence has quadrupled, which means that 10 years ago, one of the main bacteria that is basically killing 50% of the patients with a bloodstream infection has become more endemic, and now it's 4 times the rate it was 10 years ago, and we don't have a treatment for it, and people are, in the medical community are scared of this bacteria, and that's why we're, raising awareness, and talking to the providers, doctors, and patients about the risk of antibiotics and how antibiotics can produce resistant bacteria by selecting isolates of bacteria that basically are capable of sustaining the environment of antibiotics.
So are we saying that as far as the superbug, how it hits people, are these people that are kind of already sick, or are these people that are just kind of walking down the street and all of a sudden, I'm not feeling good today, maybe I have the flu? No, I actually got a superbug.
It actually affects both. And this is what's the scary part of it. It's that patients, in the past we used to see isolates of bacteria like MRSA or MRSA, which stands for methicillin-resistant Staph aureus, which is basically a bacteria that is resistant to more than a few antibiotics that we use to treat it. So in the past we used to see it only in the hospital, but now we see it in the community. And we see it in schools, we see it in the training centers, in gyms and different parts of the community. So it's not only sick patients who get it. Healthy patients can get it, and that's why we're concerned about it.
So if you think back to the 19th century, if you got pneumonia, generally you died because there's no antibiotics. We didn't really have our first antibiotic, penicillin, that started really early in the 20th century. And then when everything's going great, we have antibiotics to treat any infection. We think we're off the hook. But now in the 21st century, we're finding the bacteria are changing. where they're getting smarter somehow and become resistant to all the known antibiotics we have. So how does this happen? I mean, how do these bugs become resistant?
They're really smart. And the way it happens, these bacteria, I can give you an example. It's like if you have a child with a bad manner who's teaching another child bad manners. Mm. And it spreads in the classroom. And you get, like, you know, instead of one child
who's misbehaving.
Misbehaving, you have like 10 children now. So the same thing happens with bacteria. Bacteria have genes, and these genes change.
Okay.
And they change because of the antibiotics. So when you give too much antibiotics, or you give antibiotics for unnecessary reason, mm-hmm. the bacteria will change and adapt, and you will have strains of bacteria that are resistant in the future to the antibiotic. So the only ones that will survive in the new environment is only the bacteria that are resistant to the antibiotic.
Okay.
And they reproduce and reproduce and multiply in a fast pace. They release an enzyme that breaks down the antibiotic. They also can have a pump in their wall that basically takes the antibiotics from inside the cell to the outside of the cell. So it's like, you know, imagine you're in a house, okay, and you have somebody who's trying to break in, mm-hmm. but you're at the same time you're trying to lock the door by changing the target, you know.
Right.
You're trying to lock the door. You're trying to, if he throws something inside the house, you take it outside the house, and that's mm-hmm. the antibiotic. And at the same time, you're breaking down all everything else by releasing enzymes or releasing, you know, toxins outside the cell to try to break down the antibiotic. Does that make sense? Am I making...
Yeah, no, totally, totally. Yeah. It sounds kind of scary.
Yeah, and that's, you know, the bacteria. In the past, the bacteria was susceptible or was sensitive to the antibiotic. But nowadays, we have a lot of resistant bacteria, and we're not using penicillin anymore, except in rare occasions. Penicillin used to be the drug of choice for a lot of infections in the past.
Right, yeah.
When probably a lot of our parents grew up.
Mm-hmm.
But nowadays, penicillin is used only for a few situations in which the bacteria is only, you know, sensitive to penicillin.
Why is that? Because people are allergic?
Because penicillin doesn't work anymore.
Oh, okay, well then.
The bacteria is resistant to it. So penicillin works only in a few situations, you know, where the bacteria is sensitive. But if it's not, most of the bacteria we have now is resistant to penicillin.
Right.
So I know there are a couple, I guess, infectious diseases that are out there that you mentioned, MRSA. I know there are some others that we're more familiar with in the hospital. But are there some new infectious diseases or superbugs out that we kind of need to be specifically on the lookout for?
Right.
Good question.
You know, there's actually a couple of infections that we need to know about.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is the Clostridium difficile, which is abbreviated as C. diff.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually an infection that kills about 25,000 about 14,000 people in the United States every year.
Oh, wow.
25,000 people die from resistant bacteria in the United States every year. The infection happens because basically we kill the good bacteria in our gut.
Okay.
By giving antibiotics, again, for unclear reasons or for a viral infection. And this bacteria has the capacity of producing a toxin that damages the intestine and causes damage in the more than one system in your body. And the treatment for it, actually, is by stopping using the antibiotic that damaged the good bacteria.
Okay.
And by giving antibiotics that kills it. But sometimes we can't even treat it with the antibiotics that are available. And sometimes we end up transplanting stool from healthy donors to the people who have Clostridium difficile infection. And that has been demonstrated in Europe. We're using it in the United States. it's not a very
pleasant
procedure.
But it works.
Whoa.
It works.
I'm confused. So you're putting something into the body. Why not just putting, like, have them eat different foods that create these
enzymes? Well, because there is a lot of bacteria in our intestine that we don't have names for.
Okay.
We don't really know what they are.
Okay.
So we don't have that knowledge. I think it's going to happen in the future. It's going to happen in the future. But for now, we don't really know how to replete these bacteria, these good bacteria. The only way we have achieved this is by taking the good bacteria from healthy people and putting it in these patients.
I think it's worth pointing out that this C. diff colitis is usually a population of people with a lot of other medical problems. They've usually been hospitalized several times.
That's true.
It's not your healthy 9-year-old running off to school, and they're, you know, usually been in the hospital, multiple courses of antibiotics, their immunity is down, and they're more prone to these types of infection.
That's true. For C. diff colitis, it's a different story than MRSA, because C. diff colitis, we only see it mostly in the hospital. It's the leading cause of nosocomial infections in the United States, and it has been on the rise.
Okay. Wow. All right. Hold that thought. Audience, stay with us. We've got a lot more questions about superbugs and resistant immunity and all sorts of things.
When it comes to treatment of heart disease, there are many choices, but there's no better choice than Alvarado Hospital, right here, close to home. I'm Dr. Mike Michalski, a cardiologist with Alvarado Hospital. I am proud that our specialists bring a level of knowledge, skill, and technology that have greatly improved the lives of those in our community for the past 40 years. For more information about our cardiovascular and stroke services, please visit alvaradohospital.com or call 1-800-ALVARADO.
Alvarado is proud to be part of the top 15 health systems in the nation.
The hospital is a place for healing, but what if you're not ready to go home? If your doctor's recommending skilled nursing for extended care, Villa Las Palmas is your next step. From subacute needs to physical and occupational therapy, we handle the highest level of care outside the hospital. With our around-the-clock doctor coverage, you know you're getting the best care possible with a plan to get you stable and back home. Ask your doctor about Villa Las Palmas Healthcare Center and let us help you get back to health. For more information, please visit our website, villalaspalmascares.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Aging Redefined. I'm your host, Kendra Vallone, with my co-host, Dr. Larry Emder, and our special guest, Dr. Fadi Haddad. Today, we're talking about, well, obviously, with Dr. Haddad being infectious, board-certified in infectious disease, we're talking about superbugs and, kind of resisting antibiotics in your body and things like that. But, okay, so question for you. We just ended the last segment talking about C. diff, which is colostrum.
C. diff colitis.
All right. And obviously you walk into a hospital, Dr. Ember, you had said that this is something that you find more in a hospital with somebody
right.
that has
yeah.
has been
or
treated a lot there. Yeah, and they're
chronically ill patient.
Right. Yeah. Their immunity is down.
Infection.
When you walk into a hospital, and often in a skilled nursing facility, you see these patients that are in isolation. You know, before you walk into their room, you're supposed to put a gown on and, you know, gloves. And yesterday, I have a friend that's in the hospital right now, and I just walked straight into a room, shook her hand. Hi, how you doing? Oh, I'm not feeling good. Until I realized that she was diagnosed with C. diff, and the nurse came in and said, oh, no, you've got to be in a gown with gloves and all of this stuff. So obviously, I'm naturally a little afraid. But at the same time, what does that mean? Am I now going to get this, or why is the isolation important?
Isolation is important because healthcare providers, you know, in the past, we used to visit one room and go to another room, and we used to spread the germs from one room to another.
Mm-hmm. With your ties, right? But wasn't that something that was for a while?
That was published. Actually, healthcare providers used to transmit infections with their ties and with their phones and a lot of stethoscopes. And that's why now we have established control measures to prevent the spread of these infections.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things we do is we ask every healthcare provider to wash their hands before coming into the room and mm-hmm. after leaving the room.
Mm-hmm.
We also ask the healthcare providers to gown up if they enter a room with special precautions like the incidents mm-hmm. You mentioned. We also ask them to gown up and put gloves mm-hmm. on. Because sometimes these patients have, you know, draining wounds. They have, their urine is on, you know, on the bed. There is different, you know, fluids that come out of the patient that have the infection. Mm-hmm. And if you touch the bed or you touch the gown of the patient or you hug them or you shake hands with them, you may get the infection or you may spread the infection. And we worry about spreading the infection in the hospital. So mm-hmm. so for you, you enter the room and you wash your hands afterwards.
Right.
And so probably your risk is low, but for future purposes, it's a good idea for anyone visiting a beloved one in the hospital to gown up if they are in special precautions.
Okay. We're also empowering our patients to ask their physician, did you wash your hands before you saw me? Because we want the patients and their family to be their own self-advocates to protect themselves. And we're trying to get the words out to our medical staff to improve our compliance with hand washing to get up to 100%. Why? Because this will decrease the spread of infection within the hospital.
Now, hand washing, is that the same as using the antibacterial gel that's there?
Well, if it is the same if your hand is not soiled and if it doesn't have a lot of, like let's suppose you have a lot of soiling on the hands, then sanitizer is not going to work.
Okay.
You need to wash your hands.
Okay.
In cases with C. diff colitis, because we have spores, and these spores are hard to eradicate with using the sanitizer, for all patients or for all patients with C. diff colitis, we recommend hand washing for everyone entering their rooms.
Okay. And that gets rid of everything? I mean, like...
Hand washing for 30 seconds.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday. Right.
Sing happy birthday.
Mm-hmm. Is adequate to eradicate, these bacteria.
What about treatment with probiots? Do they work?
You know, I am...
And probiotics are kind of a healthy bacteria and yeast that you can...
Like you cult, right?
The active cultures. You buy it from Trader Joe or,
yogurt. Yeah, grocery store.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They have been shown in some studies that they're helpful and some studies they're not helpful. But for the general public, I think it's a good idea to... maintain a healthy diet and to stay away from foods that have been treated with antibiotics. Because honestly, we have a problem in the agriculture in America.
Mm-hmm.
The industry.
Industry, yeah. Yeah. I mean, the poultry and, poultry and
vegetables and
meat, you know, they feed these animals antibiotics. And poultry have basically antibiotics. So we're eating antibiotics with our foods, and this is makes it more difficult for us to have a healthy normal flora because we're damaging our normal flora by taking antibiotics from food.
I mean, not only that, if they're feeding the animals antibiotics, they're actually selecting out for more resistant bacteria
that
we are ingesting.
And that actually can also lead to a rise in foodborne illnesses, because what happens when you feed the animals antibiotics, you select resistant bacteria like E. coli 0157, in which this is a certain bacteria that actually can lead to serious illness, as Larry, patients may eat an undercooked hamburger and get sick because we are giving too much antibiotics to our animals in the United States.
So we're talking mainly that it revolves around meat, right? This isn't like organic for vegetables and everything or is that kind of related to the same thing?
Like vegetables too. I mean, you obviously can get
right, but some of it. I mean, it's in there, right? Like if they're growing with it, isn't it in there
in the meat?
In the vegetable.
The vegetables.
Well, what happens sometimes? They feed these animals so much before they slaughter them, and then the manure, which has the resistant bacteria, goes into
the vegetables.
And then you end up with resistant bacteria on the vegetables. So wash your vegetables, no matter what they say, wash them very well.
Right.
So I think as a society, you know, I guess one of my early questions, like, why do we have these superbugs? And I think what you're describing here is our food source, by feeding our animals antibiotics, we're selecting out for more resistant organisms that we're being exposed to. I think there's also a problem with over-prescribing of physicians antibiotics to the patients, which, again, selects out for these more resistant bacteria. So that we're doing things as a society which are, I believe, is selecting out for these superbugs. Would you agree with that?
I agree totally. I think, you know, a lot of healthcare providers are for unknown reasons. Sometimes it's medical-legal, or sometimes it's because of family pressure. They prescribe antibiotics. You know, the patient calls up the doctor and say, you know what, I have a fever and I am sick and I want an antibiotic.
I have a perfect example.
Go ahead.
My brother-in-law, Mark, you know, I love him. Love him to pieces. Mm-hmm. As much as you can love a brother-in-law. So he develops a bronchitis. This is about 3 or 4 months ago. And he said to me, brother-in-law, you know, give me an antibiotic. I said, I'm not going to give you an antibiotic because it's, you know, it's probably a virus. And I mean, and he's coughing now, 2, 3. I said, I'm not going to give you the antibiotic. So what does he do? He gets referred to another pulmonologist, gives him an antibiotic, and like he's better like in a week. He goes, you see, you should have given me an antibiotic. So
it's probably gotten better without an antibiotic.
Yeah, I say if you just waited one more week. But the point is just a lot of pressure. A patient goes into a doctor's office, pays a big copay. They want something to happen. Mm-hmm. And the doctor, you know, will tell him, no, you don't need the antibiotic, but, you know, you get pressure. But all these things contribute to, you know, these superbugs.
That's true. That's totally true, and I think we need to educate our public not to pressure their doctors, you know, and to understand that, you know, antibiotics are not harmless.
Yeah, they, it's a double-edged sword. It can help, but it can hurt.
It can help, and it can hurt. And if you have a viral infection, antibiotics are not gonna work, and they have to understand that.
How do you know when it's a viral and when it's not?
Well, basically, a viral infection presents with, like, the snuffles. You know, you have, you know, the runny nose. You
cough.
They have mild cough. You have sometimes, you know,
low-grade fever.
Body aches.
You don't really look very sick. I mean, if you have a bacterial infection, you're really sick. And the same thing goes for children. In children, I mean, if they are eating, and if you relieve their fever and they are playful and they're eating and they're, you know, active, then they probably don't have a viral, they don't have a bacterial infection, but they do have a viral infection that will take, you know, a few days to get better. But, you know, it's worth the wait rather than just give an antibiotic and
so
have the side effect.
Is that why they say with the flu, like, there's really nothing you can take? So,
well, that's not true.
There is a treatment for the flu. I mean, that is basically, which is Tamiflu.
Tamiflu. I was going to ask about that because we were talking about the flu last week.
Another ID specialist.
But that's not an antibiotic, though.
What is it?
It's an antiviral. It's not an antibacterial. So it works in a different
mechanism.
I mean, it basically inhibits the binding of the virus to the cells and causes, you know, it makes the patient feel better by 1 or 2 days, you know.
So that's not building up an immunity or resistance to bad bacteria then, right?
No,
so this is okay.
It's different.
Okay, so this is okay. It's just in a different...
But, good question.
Okay. But thank you. Well, I'm concerned. I mean, heaven forbid I get this flu again. I'm getting my flu shot still. Yeah, but anyway. Okay. Audience members out there, stay right with us. We will be back to talk more about this and bring up some other topics on...
Superbugs.
I know.
They're not super good.
When Joe was in his last days, I was frightened of not having the right help at the right moment. So I set out to find a hospice I could call at any time, day or night. Only VITAS provided telecare, the 24-hour access we needed.
Mom's illness was overwhelming toward the end, and I wanted a hospice that had everything and everyone we needed. We discovered only VITAS employs more physicians who specialize in hospice care than anyone nationally. That made Mom and us feel better.
When Carol was dying, I promised she could stay at home and had the very best care. I did my research. Only VITAS had the experience to take care of the love of my life.
Call VITAS Innovative Hospice Care toll-free at 877-647-1124 for a free hospice evaluation. That's 877-647-1124. Or visit VITAS.com for more information.
Transition is always difficult, especially after surgery. At Villa Las Palmas Healthcare Center, we make sure it's as efficient as possible. As one of the highest-rated Medicare facilities in San Diego, we offer a variety of services to meet your needs. From subacute care to general physical therapy, we'll help create a plan to get you back to where you want to be. If your doctor recommends skilled nursing as your next step, come visit us and see how our skilled care has what you need to get back on your feet. For more information, please visit our website, VillaLasPalmasCares.com.
Okay, welcome back, listeners. We're with an expert in infectious disease, Dr. Haddad, who's board certified in internal medicine and infectious disease, practicing in the East County. And we've been talking about superbugs, which are not super good, but super bad. And we've kind of touched on C. diff colitis and MRSA infections, which are methicillin-resistant Staph aureus. Something we hear about in the news a lot of times is flesh-eating bacteria. What is this, Dr. Haddad?
Flesh-eating bacteria is a description that has been used for strains of bacteria that basically could be Streptococcus or Staphylococcus.
Okay.
And, you know, Streptococcus and Staphylococcus are Greek names for bacteria. So Staphylococcus means it's basically spherical bacteria. It looks like balls that basically are clustered together.
Okay.
And staph is staphylococcus means it's the aureus is gold. So basically, it's golden colonies that look like clusters of grapes under the microscope.
All right.
And Streptococcus is this thing is similar to that, but it's like chains, and they look like chains under the microscope, spheres of bacteria that are in chains. The flesh-eating bacteria has gained a lot of publicity on the media because of its bad outcomes.
But it's still pretty rare.
It is rare. Usually patients present with severe pain. They have fallen, or there is like a scratch, or there is, you know, an entry, a point of entry on the skin. The bacteria spreads rapidly in the tissue. And it actually spreads in the tissue fascia, in the planes of that.
Can it occur with
tissue.
Healthy individuals or these
it
people?
It can occur in healthy individuals, and it can actually have a devastating consequences, and includes amputations, or it requires surgical intervention. It's still susceptible and sensitive to penicillin. But antibiotics alone are not adequate to treat it. You need immediate surgical intervention. And it's very hard to make a diagnosis of it because sometimes, you know, you look at the patient and they have only pain. And because pain is so subjective, sometimes it's misdiagnosed. And patients, you know, they basically have a later presentation than early presentation.
So what can our audience do to prevent themselves from getting one of these flesh-eating bacteria? What do you have to
do? Again, if you have scratches, you know, if you have abrasions in your skin, cover them. Make sure you wash your hands. Make sure that if you have a pain and if you have changes on the wound, redness, swelling, seek attention and see your doctor early.
Yeah.
Because, you know, this can progress rapidly.
Now, these are specific diseases, though, right? Like, it's not... for example, if somebody has C. diff and then another person has a scratch and they touch somebody with C. diff, that C. diff gets into the scratch and it goes that way.
That's
correct?
True. That's true. Each infection has its own way of transmission and its own way of causing the illness. So C. diff is not gonna go on the skin. C. diff is gonna go in the intestines and causes an infection in the intestines.
Another disease I'm just starting to hear about in the hospital setting is something called KPC. What is it, and is it a serious problem?
It is very serious because it stands for Klebsiella-producing carbapenemase. And Klebsiella is a type of bacteria producing an enzyme that breaks down the biggest guns we have, which is basically
our strongest antibiotics.
The strongest antibiotics. So it was rare 10 years ago, but now it's on the rise. And the reason for that is because we have used all what we have, and we just have to use the carbapenems, which are a class of antibiotics that are used only in certain patients with resistant bacteria, and now we have resistant to these antibiotics.
Right.
So we're running out of options.
It's getting like the 19th century again. We're
That's
having
true.
Infection,
the
pre, we can't treat
the
it.
Pre-antibiotic era. You know, we are back to the 1900s, you know, in which, you know, we don't have sometimes options of treatment.
And is it possible to take one of those bacteria, change it around, and then insert it back into the system? Like, does it work like that? You know how kind of the flu shot, you take something, but it's dead, and then you reinsert it, and it fights it off?
Well, I have heard in the news, and I haven't seen that yet, you know, but I have heard they're using viruses to eat bacteria. That may be promising, but so far we have not seen bacteria changing in the like bacteria replacing other bacteria. Usually the bad bacteria will overcome the good bacteria.
Okay.
So what about drugs? Are there any new drugs coming down the pike that we can use for these super infections?
Actually, unfortunately, we don't have any. The pipeline seems to be very, very...
Dried up
because we have a lot of challenges in the United States
to make
antibiotics. One is that fact that, you know, pharmaceutical companies don't make much money out of, you know, making an antibiotic. The antibiotic patents usually they last for a few years, and then they're not making much profit because they're not something that you use every day.
Right.
They're used for 10 days or 14 days, and then that's it.
Right.
So that's one of the challenges. The other challenge is that the gram-negative bacteria are difficult to treat. The bacteria that we mentioned before are difficult to treat. And what we have done is to resort to antibiotics that are very harmful. With a lot of side effects that were used in the 50s, such as colistin. It's an antibiotic.
I'm a microbiologist in a future life, and used to use colistin to clean the tabletops because it was so toxic to get rid of the bacteria.
That's true. And now we're using it to treat these resistant bacteria. And colistin is harmful to your kidneys, harmful to your nervous system, but we have no choice but to use it when these patients present with these serious infections, because we have no options. I mean, the other option is to, let the the bacteria will eat your body systems unless you intervene.
So what is the impact of all this on the U.S. healthcare system?
Well, it's costing the U.S. healthcare system $1 billion annually in expenditure. It's causing 25,000 deaths. And it's causing infections in 1 million people. So we're talking about a very big effect in the U.S. Healthcare system. And without new drugs, without new options of treatment, I think we will be back to the 1900 era.
So this is kind of a controversial question. Leave it to me to ask it. But a lot of people that have kids now are not wanting to give like immunity shots to their children.
Yeah.
And is that kind of along the same, would it be for that reason?
The anti-vaccine movement has gained a lot of attention because of a study that was published in the Lancet in England and then was withdrawn and has shown that there was a lot of
problems with the study.
We know that people are living longer because we have overcome infections.
Mm-hmm.
People live longer because they're immune to infections.
Mm-hmm.
The longevity of people is the highest ever.
Mm.
So, the vaccinations actually has proven to be
effective.
But I mean, you don't expect that every vaccine is going to give you 100% mm-hmm. efficacy. So vaccines, even with the flu vaccine, mm-hmm. you get 60-70%. So
right.
you're still losing 30% that people who get immunized and still can get the flu.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, I mean, we don't have polio.
Right.
I mean, polio now is resurging in countries like Pakistan and like, you know, countries in the third world countries that they don't want to vaccinate their kids. And that's concerning to the public health officials because it's going to lead to spread of infections that we never see in mm-hmm. because people are not immunizing their kids.
Yeah, so I'm a proponent to immunize your children. You know, I think that's would be a positive thing.
Mm-hmm.
Especially for serious illnesses such as polio.
Mm-hmm.
Other things I think our listeners can do is simple things like hand washing.
Mm-hmm.
In the environment, you know, probably 50% of the staph infections in the environment now are MRSA infections from the home. So just, you know, cleaning down the countertops, computer tops, doorknobs once a week with a Lysol solution will clean the home environment. Just washing your fruits and vegetables and, you know, cooking your meats, making sure, you know, you're killing all the bacteria are all great things to do. You're not hounding your doctor for antibiotics, and pressuring him because really over 90% of the time the infection is probably viral and not bacterial. Because we obviously have to do things as a society not to put these pressure on the bacteria where we're selecting out for these really highly resistant bacteria. Would you agree with that?
I agree completely. And I think what I recommend to my patients, I just say, just wash your hands, make sure that you cover your wounds. I mean, if you get a little scratch, don't just ignore it and, you know, not cover it. Cover your wounds. Make sure that you eat healthy. Lose weight, all these things will help in mm-hmm. your general, health and make sure, and that will probably lessen the risk of infections in the future.
So if someone from our audience has an infectious disease question, how could they get in touch with you?
Well, basically they can call my office and or they can just,
stop by the hospital.
Stop by the office, and ask questions.
You're in the East County?
My office is now in East County. It's on across from Sharp Grossman Hospital.
Dr. Fadi Haddad. And I can be found on the web at drlarryemder.com.
Mm-hmm.
And Kendra, how do we find you?
Facebook. There's a lot of ways to contact us. So if our audience members out there do have any questions, feel free to jump on our Facebook page, which again is Aging Redefined Radio. We can also post contact information for any of our previous doctors. And if you've got any questions, would like to have them read on the air or have a subject that you'd like us to talk about, please let us know. You can also email me at kvallone@plumh.com. That's kvallone at plumh.com. So thanks so much for tuning in and staying with us, and we will talk to you next week.
You've been listening to Aging Redefined with your host, Kendra Vallone.